Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be looking at recovered loot or assets and Nigeria's anti-corruption efforts. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Tolu Olariwaju, a lecturer in management at Adkio University. He's also the director of student recruitment. Tolu has taught, researched, and practiced entrepreneurship, international business, and business management for over a decade. He has made major contributions to the field of anti-corruption research and education over 13 years, advancing both academic understanding and practical applications in different contexts like Nigeria and other low and middle income nations. Tolu, I'm very, very pleased to have you join me today, and I look forward to a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much, everyone. It's good to be here. Hi, hello. Just as a minor correction there, I am the director of student recruitment at Keele Business School, not for the entire university.
No, yes. Okay. Thanks for that. Thanks for the observation. Let's start off. So we've seen in the last 20 plus years since Nigeria returned to democratic rule after a long spell of military rule. Nigeria has recovered, I think, over $4 billion in cash, and then $2 billion assets has been recovered since 1999 till date from funds that have been stolen largely from the last dictator that Nigeria had, General Abacha, and recently from the former Minister of Petroleum, Diazini Madueke, under the administration of President Goodluck Jonathan. So I guess the question I want to ask is, I want to just start from, let's start from the elephant in the room. Where are these monies? So we've had these are very large monies. Where are these monies? Let's start from there.
Okay, very good. That's a fantastic question. Thank you, Michael. So the monies have been taken out of the Nigerian state. They are in the bank accounts of these corrupt individuals themselves, in the bank accounts of their friends, their relatives, family members, their cronies, their business associates. They're in business accounts. A lot of them are in places where there is secrecy in banking. Lots of European countries, but then it'll be Swiss banks or other tax havens. I guess for me, the important question has to be, how did the money end up there? So the problem is a lack of transparency. Transparency is the enemy of corruption. I like when you started, you said that Nigeria has transitioned from a military dictatorship kind of system of governance to quasi-democracy. It's not full democracy. It's a hybrid form of democracy. So if you look at the democratic form of governance, in the way it should run, power and resources should be in the hands of the people. Of course, the power and the resource we're talking about here is the budget of the country. That's where you see exactly how much, in terms of financial resources, the country has, and then managing that budget. So these monies that have been stolen have left, right? So the problem is there's a lack of transparency, and that transparency has to be restored. So that's what my work has basically aimed to do, right? I've looked at the conditions where transparency do not occur, and of course, things that facilitate that. So let's start from the top. So the budget that we have, we can say largely inherited from the colonial time. So if you look at the colonial period, and I have written a bit on this, I hope you'll be able to put the links under this podcast. You know, when there's a colonial master, the colonial master does not need to tell the subjects what you're doing with the budget. You know, under slavery as well, we know there was a time when the western part of Africa was called the slave coast. You know, you have no say. So, you know, Nigeria transitioned from these very bad times, you know, from slavery and then the banning, you know, whatever happened to stop that trade. And then we had the colonial period. And with the colonial period, the aim of the colonialists was to extract resources. It was not to invest in the people. It was to extract resources from the colonies to the motherland, okay? And Nigeria was one of those colonies. Lots of African countries were part of these colonies. So there wasn't any system to take from the colonies and invest in the colonies. So we have problem number one. Then we had the First Republic, and I know you've done research into republics, especially you're looking at the fourth one now, was meant to, in large part, solve this problem. So people wanted control of their own resources to be able to have a say in what happens in where they are. And these systems, and I think something interesting for your audience to note would be this year, the winners of the Nobel Prize in Economics, Ismogul and Robinson, they were looking at institutions. Now, the institutions that were inherited after the colonial era were not institutions that were meant to support the colonies. Okay. So the great contribution of Ismogul and Robinson, and why they were recognized this year in the Nobel Prize of Economics, is that you see there was a difference in institutions where the colonial masters, in quotes, wanted to stay. Places like America, the USA, that was a colony, Canada, that was a colony, Australia, that was a colony. The institutions and the resources were meant to help the people there. So the budget and all the other institutions encourage transparency and the investment in the people's lives, in infrastructure, in things that would improve the standard of living. In places like Nigeria, India, Mexico, where the colonial, for want of a better term, masters did not want to stay, they didn't have those kinds of institutions, those kind of transparent budgets, those kinds of things that would help the lives of the people in these places. So Nigeria inherited that, okay? We inherited that. And Ismogul and Robinson, you see, the problem with that is that a few strong men can then come in and hijack the institutions. So Nigeria suffers from what you call a resource curse. You know that soon after independence, oil was discovered. So when oil is discovered, the country is supposed to sell oil, the money is supposed to come in, and that money is supposed to be used to build infrastructure, ports, airport, road ports, airports, seaports, roads, educational institutions, hospitals, right? That's what it should be used for, okay? But that wasn't done, right? And I'll share why it wasn't in a minute. So you have this situation whereby you have resources. So resources, oil is being sold, money is in. There is a way to account for this, or this oil revenue via the budget. And then that oil revenue is not being spent on the people. And like you have rightly said, and the aim of your institution is, is now that money is now ending up in the coffers of individuals like Desani, right? Like these other corrupt individuals, like the politicians, right? So here you have a problem. Why does that happen? That happens like I pointed out by Robinson and Esmogo, because you have the wrong institutions. The main institution here is lack of transparency. So let me explain what I mean by that. Michael, if you have 1 million naira and you place it on the table, right, in a room, and of course you can see it, I can see it, maybe other people too can see it. Anyone who wants to steal that money would easily be noticed by us, right? Yes, because as soon as the person takes their hand to take the money, we'll be like, why are you taking that money, right?
Exactly.
So transparency is the enemy of corruption. In that case, if the person wants to steal the money, what will the person do? They'll probably wait until it's dark, turn off the lights or something, right? And take the money. Or they'll find a way to block our view of the money. Maybe they'll put a bucket on top of the money. They'll ask somebody to, you know, block our view. So as soon as transparency is lost, then individuals can have access to these resources, right? And that's what's happened in this case. Now, I've talked about the colonial era. I've talked about the First Republic and the rise of strongmen. Now, it got worse under the military regime. Why? Because, okay, so Nigeria had a series of coups, for those of us who don't know about that. And when the military comes into power, in the military, right, whoever is in charge, whoever is on top, gives orders. It doesn't matter who's beneath, right? So we have we had military dictators. They'll be called CNC, commanders in chief. If the commander in chief says, take this money and put it in that account, you know, God bless you, you disagree, right? So we've had lots of assassinations. A lot of people have lost their lives because they were concerned about the state of the economy and the state of the country and, you know, state of their countrymen and women. So you have that. Of course, the military did a lot of things. You know, they created states. That's another debate for another day. But in reference to our topic here, the budget, once again, the citizenry had no way of knowing what was happening. So take this example of the money in the room. They didn't know how much was in the room. They didn't know who was taking what was in the room, right? They had no clue. They had no say over the activities and the money in the room. And then Nigeria came into this era of democracy. So just as a bit of historical context as well, we are also recovering funds from the military regime. So Abacha loot and other forms of loot have come in recently as well. So that came in during the Buhari regime, for instance. And I wrote that. And people accused the Buhari government of using that money to buy votes because the money was supposed to be given to poor individuals in certain states, right? And we're like, it's just a way of you to bribe them because the election is very close. Now again, so Dzeni's case happened during the democratic regime. But once again, the commonality I'm trying to point out for all of them, whether it be historical slavery, colonial era, military era, democratic era, is that we have a lack of transparency for all these eras. So once again, during the the return to the democratic regime, once again, individuals could not see how much the government was making. They could not give suggestions. The government was making all this money, and individuals had a field day. Corrupt individuals had a field day taking this money out. So my research has found, really, in regards to the zonal intervention projects, so these are projects that the budget says, this is, there's, say, money here, it should be done. There are a couple here which the money is stolen. The first one is the non-execution of budgets. So money is set aside for something, it's not done. The second one is vaguely specifying the budget. So the budget is worded in a way that you don't know if what should be spent here is 1,000 naira or 10,000 naira. The third one is benefiting only political party loyalists, opposed to everyone. The fourth one, you know, you can say under delivery or abandonment of projects. So you know, a classroom that should be built and should cost 100,000, you know, something is erected that costs, you know, 20,000, you know. And of course, there are other things, right? So misrepresentation, inflation. You find that some items keep repeating themselves in the budget. The commonality for all of these, once again, is lack of transparency. Okay. And I have done some research on this. I have a paper coming out, is under review at the major journal. And this is really the crux of it. So what does it say? It says, in order to restore transparency to the Nigerian budget, everybody needs to be able to see the money, right? Mm. See who is taking the money.
Mm.
That has to be crystal clear. So all Nigerians, regardless of who you are and where you are, for instance, Michael, let me give you an example. Do you know how much is in the federal government budget for this year?
No, not at the moment.
Exactly, you don't know. What state are you from, sir?
So I would say Lagos, but my origin, my parents would be Abia, but I was considering
raising. Okay, so do you know how much has been budgeted to be spent in either Lagos or Abia this year?
No.
Absolutely, that's the problem. So what my research also finds is that politicians will also go on vanity projects. They will do things in Abia or Lagos that the population doesn't want. For instance, they will decide to build, you know, for want of a better term,
a bridge,
a town hall. Mm. And the people are like, that's not what we need. We need electricity. Mm. We need a hospital. We need schools.
Mm.
Mm. So in order to do that, my proposal is simply this. The budget has to be viewed online real time by all Nigerians everywhere. And we can do that. There are some countries that are doing this, right? Some countries in South Asia, you know, some African countries too are trying to do this. You see that in most of the Western countries as well, you know, a lot of them have some of this. So what does that mean?
Go ahead. Yeah. Okay.
So that means, for instance, and I'll do this and I'll like to ask a question. So if the Nigerian government says that this year all its oil revenues and all its tax revenues and all its revenues from all its assets and all its revenues from all its business is 1 billion naira. All of us, regardless of where we are, can log on, right? And we can see, and there has to be one central account where we can see 1 billion naira. We can see. If the government then says, right, we are going to take out of this 1 billion naira, we're going to give 100,000 to the Lagos state government, we're going to give 100,000 to the Abia state government, we need to be able to see 100,000 leaving the account of the government and going into the account of Lagos state or Abia state. If the governor in Abia state or Lagos state says, we're going to be building a block of classrooms or we're going to be building a hospital, there has to be a process by which engineering firms bid. If they say this is going to be worth 3,000, there needs to be a bid, right? And they bid for that project. That bid can be closed, but after maybe 3 years or 4 years, we need to know what exactly each company said they were going to do. And if there has been a discrepancy on that, somebody goes to prison. But that's by the way.
I like you said so many very comprehensive answer, you know, from the historical to this, and you're quite right. I didn't mention that, like in the book, I was looking at I was looking at Nigeria's one, the legacy of colonialism. So I look at how the leaders in Nigeria inherited the colonial, and they've perfected it. They inherited and then became the perfected that politics of ethnic manipulation, politics of violence, and all of that. And I also said what we have is also like, rather than democracy, civilian government. So we have civilian government. So there's that stuff. But again, I also acknowledge some of the progress we've made in the First Republic. Looking at like in terms of extraction industry, looking at even budgeting, looking at budget, because when I was doing my stuff, I was surprised I could go on the Ministry of State Budget and I could see the budget from like starting from 2011. This was not what you would normally would see. Before you understand where I was telling the boys, this is normally what you would see in Nigerian stuff. But you mentioned a lot of things, and I would start off from there. So we understand the historical bit. I understand that Nigeria still suffers from the colonial master, like Riley said, it wasn't nation building. It was an extractive stuff. I think it was just maybe 10 years before independence that, you know, they started looking into all of that. So there was no objective or goal of nation building. So Nigeria still suffers from that. But let's say, let's give and take. Like what people argue, you say, okay, we understand this colonial stuff. Nigeria has now had civil and democratic in the last 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. So it should take responsibility for some of those stuff. Yeah. Now, if we look at that and say, okay, during Abacha, during the military, they rule by decree and someone can just print out money. How about during the civilian rule? How is an individual able to do this? Well, we've rightly pointed that there's a court and associates and all of that stuff. Now, I guess the question is this. How do we, I'm just mindful of time, how do we create, because I don't think it's a lack of, from what you said, there's not a lack of the institution. From all of this stuff I've mentioned, you go there, you can see budget, but they're like, so there are budgets that are not budgeted for in the formal budget, security votes, all of these other kind of stuff. How do we, and then you also talk about the election as well, where you had the hope that there was going to be real-time announcement of elections and it didn't happen. All this. And so this is what I'm saying. Nigeria has all this ideal, all these institutions. What is the problem? Is there a fundamental problem?
Good question. Good question. Good question. There is a fundamental question. So, you know, I was talking about something that we need to have, which is transparency. But the other leg of it is penalties for breaking the law. So, you know, this example I was just given, I said, say the government of Lagos gets 100,000, the government of Abia gets 100,000. They're about to build a school. The school costs 3,000 naira. We need to be able to see the 3,000 naira leave the school, the account of the government. We need to see it going to the account of the company that has made or has won that bid. If after the specified period of time, let's say 3 or 4 years, that school has not been built, there has to be a penalty. There must be a penalty. As long as you do not penalize these corrupt acts, for instance, the Abachas for not stealing money, for instance, Dizani for stealing money, as long as they're allowed to live lavish lives, as long as the money that they've stolen is not taken back from them and they do not spend time in prison, nothing will change. So what needs to happen in addition to transparency is there has to be penalties for corruption and corrupt acts. So
I already see a problem with that, which I want to just interrupt. Who is going to give this penalty? Because are we talking about the same justice system that is, we are assuming that the justice system is independent and not corrupt itself. And then who?
So you're absolutely right. So the problem we have, like you're right now, is our system, our laws allow for, I mean, look at what's happened, right? So this money is being returned by a foreign government. If that money was in Nigeria, that money would not be returned, right? So you can see that even these places where we're trying to be democratic like them, and there are benefits to democracy, okay, there are, although it has its flaws as well, you can see that even they do not want that corrupt money in their system. Because it corrupts the people. It makes, so for instance, look at two of us now, right? So, you know, we're scholars, we're academics, we're researchers, we're lecturers, we're teachers, we're trying to make the world a better place in our own little corner. As soon as the young generation coming up, the little ones, as soon as it's more profitable for them to steal money than to actually contribute, it skews everything in society. As long as it's possible for them to commit these acts and get away with it, then there's a problem. Now, you asked, is it going to be our institutions that are going to solve the problem? It must be them. We must find a way, right? We must come up with credible institutions. So we have to, the way it is now, I think, so we have EFCC, and I forgot the name of the second body now, that investigates, you know, financial crimes, especially government crimes in Nigeria. And there's always this overlap, you know, who
should,
who should investigate what. And there's also the overlap of some cows are sacred. You know, there's a big man, you know, there's big man syndrome. And as long as we have that, nothing is going to change. So if you look at places like China, South Korea, people that have held very high positions have ended up in prison. We have to have a system whereby even if the president has stolen money, the president goes to prison. That's why it's transparent. That's why I said the first thing we must have is transparency. So there is evidence. So because as long as you don't have that transparency, someone can say, well, you know, like, for instance, we didn't know when any of this money left Nigeria, the money that has been returned. We didn't know. But it, once there's transparency, when you can see a transaction, money leaves the account and we don't know where it's going, who it's going to, somebody must be held accountable.
But I'm sorry to interject as well. There's something I want to say that you mentioned that I don't think I agree, but maybe I'll give you an opportunity to explain. You said you were talking about the... maybe in these countries where these monies are being taken to. You said something, they don't want the corrupt money. I want to differ a little bit because London has, well, London, for instance, have been seen as the corrupt capital where dirty money come from, Russia from this, and Swiss and other places. I know back in the days, there was also some resistance to release some of Obatcha's funds. So I want to disagree a little bit. And then if we talk about terrorism financing and look at how we check this, are we saying that these countries themselves, are they not complicit? Should they not have if ordinary person like you and I go to the bank, we're saying definitely in this country you can't hold more than a certain amount of money, like cash. You can't even travel by plane with more than 10,000 whatever. Yes. So if somebody is bringing in something to your bank and they accept it, does that not make you complicit in a way?
Very good. That's a very, very good question. I'm glad you asked that. Because you're right, the city of London itself is a magnet for. In fact, I think the Zeni bought some property there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And yes, you do find lots of Nigerian and African politicians that have stolen money, and they want to take it to, you know, Europe. You know, whether that be London, whether that be places in Switzerland, and you name it, you know, and you see Russian oligarchs as well. You see, the thing is, the banks themselves, and there's a class system here. There is a class system. So, you know, in all these countries where they take the money to, there are corrupt individuals as well. There are corrupt bankers. There are people who will gladly take that money from them and try to hide it from them. Right? But there are also, at least the reason why we're returning this money now, or this money is being returned, is that there are also good individuals. There are also laws there that are at least stronger than what we have in Nigeria. And that's why it's been returned. So the principle behind those laws is that we don't want corrupt money. Now, there are people who are breaking them. There are people within those societies who are breaking them. There are bankers. I know a couple of banks themselves have been pulled and they've been fined for these monies, right? But the state itself does not want it, because the state itself recognizes that these monies create a skew. It makes people, instead of someone choosing to be, for want of a better term, poor and righteous, and there are Africans, there are Nigerians who will literally see that money, and I know it might be hard to imagine, there are people who will see corrupt money and be like, I don't want it. I'll rather be poor and you know, live with my integrity. Then some, and there are others who will say, oh, right, I'll help you take the money. So this is what you find. So that's what you're finding here as well. So there are individuals, and the banks are very complicit in this, you know, and there is a class system. Even in the UK, there are individuals who take their money to tax havens, who, you know, take their money out, who don't want to pay taxes. And there are individuals who say, no, that is wrong. So there is that. So Nigeria has to come up with right, and we can have laws that are even stronger than the ones abroad. I know now it seems like it can never happen, but it can happen. If you look at African history, you know, before slavery, pre-slavery, pre-colonization, we had institutions, right? We had ways of checking and balancing, and we have to go back to that. We can't say that because the West hasn't gotten it right, we will not get it right, or we can't be better than them. We can be better than them. We can have laws that are stronger than what happens in the West. Like, for instance, this model I'm telling you about of transparency, we can have stringent transparency laws, because our problem is harder than what happens in the West. And one of the reasons for that is because a country like Nigeria is very heterogeneous. So look at Nigeria. Nigeria has 525 languages. Now I think it's down to 520. Five of them have gone extinct. It has, I think it's the third most ethnically diverse place in the world, countries. A country like Nigeria would have never existed without Britain, right? Because the British, they came, they colonized this area. And then you hear that in 1914, they amalgamated the North and the South. There was no reason why that would have been one country. Look towards the north of Nigeria, where you have Hausa, Fulani, and all the rest. You know, you also have people of that ethnicity in Niger, in Chad, and other countries. Look at the southwest, where you have Yoruba people. You see that as you keep going all the way southwest till you get to Ghana, you know, there are Yoruba speakers, okay? Then if you look at the Igbo region as well, you look at the south-south, look at all the other regions as well, you find this diversity. So these people would have not been one country normally. So what you find is that when you look at the budget, it's worse for us, because you can say, yes, at least England, Britain itself, they are four kingdoms. Yes. Okay. But the heterogeneity is not as much as you have in Africa. Africa, humanity started in Africa, much more heterogeneous. So when you look at resources, when you put those people together, they have different things they want to do with the money. Those in the north want to do something. Those in the southeast want to do something. Those in the southwest want to do something. Those in the south-south want to do something. So we have to have a way of transparency where we come together and we say, okay, this is what we have, and this is what we're going to use it for. We're not going to take some of that money somewhere because of our ethnicity, somewhere because of our religion, somewhere because of our historical factors, somewhere because, you know, for some other reason, for familiar reason. So Nigeria actually has to have more stringent laws than in the West because of its history, because of its ethnic makeup. We can't just follow what happens in the West. We can't, because you've done research on Boko Haram, right? So there is ethnic tension. There is religious tension. You need to bring back that honesty. You know, one of the, if you read Nathaniel Nunn's books as well, he's in Harvard at the moment, you find that slavery historically has also caused more suspicion between African tribes, you know? So we need ways to bring back that on that transparency, that trust in ourselves.
You know what you're saying, that mirrors my current research. So my current research, I'm looking at democracy and militarization in the 21st century. So one of the things is I'm questioning liberal democracy and how it caused cost militarization, how Africa needs to have like an African style kind of democracy. And one of the things about liberal democracy is it's a promotion of multi-party system elections. As long as election, there's no accountability that you're talking about. And then again, but because of time, I think we have to have part two of this, because this is quite interesting. Because of time, my PhD student I've just graduated did something on white collar crime and organized criminal. I can understand the global transnational connection of this stuff. That is a global thing. It's not just when you say Nigeria as well, and that's what I'm saying about the complicity of these countries as well, because it's a global. It's one country, one individual country cannot handle it. It has to be changed. So I guess the question is this: number one, these are embedded questions. So because of time, number one, how, what are the procedures involved in the return of this money? Two, as well, we've seen where in the past, I think the main question I want to ask is this: the monies that have been recovered so far, where are this money? How have they impacted? Have they had any impact? Because then again, we've seen in recent times with the US, they've tried to get like a third party, like the World Bank, to monitor this one, to give conditions to Nigerian government as well, how this money needs to be deployed. And we'll see maybe some kind of resistance from Nigerian parliament. So what is your assessment of all this?
The first thing was the procedure. So this money in particular, the Zenis money, you know, a couple of assets were seized and some of them were sold, you know, if I'm precise. So the US government announced that the assets were forfeited. Okay, so that means that they seized the assets, they probably sold them. And then 52.88 million is now being given back. And you're right, it's being given back via the World Bank, you know. Mm-hmm. And the World Bank has said, right, what we're going to do is we're going to use this money to support rural electrification. Okay, mm-hmm. So, you know, you took, like we said, the money itself, resources should have been spent on the people, right? That's what should have been done. Now you took it out, we're going to bring it back and spend it back on the people. So that's the principle the World Bank is following. So that's it. Now, are there other governments that are complicit? Of course. You're absolutely right. There are governments that are complicit. There are individuals that are complicit. You know, for them, they see, money coming in. Like I said, you know, even though I did say that they're saying, right, we don't want this system in our country. So they don't mind taking the money. Some of them don't mind, but they don't want that system of corruption to perpetuate in their country. Because when it does, what corruption does is it reduces productivity. I'll give you an example. If you're a company and you want to set up shop, you probably wouldn't want to go to a corrupt country. Why? Because it's harder to get permits. It's harder to enforce contracts. You know, some government official is like, give me money or else you can't set up your factory here. You can't do this. And if you give money, how do you enforce it? How do you enforce money given under bribery conditions? You can't. You have to trust that the other party will do what they said they were going to do, even though you don't have a written contract. It makes things more expensive. It makes the business environment more uncertain. If you're an honest government, you don't want that. You want companies to come to your country and invest and hire people and come up with goods and services that you can sell and bring in foreign exchange. That's what you want. So we're actually shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, these people taking out this money from the system, they don't understand this is impacting generations yet unborn. You know, companies are not being started. People's educations are not being, you know, it's not getting to the logical conclusion. You have people dying because you don't have medical facilities. And of course, you're preventing companies from coming. So it has a multiplier effect, you know. So that's the main thing. And you were asking what my opinion is concerning this. Well, I think, see, I try to be a realist here. Right?
No, I was talking to one opinion I'm asking is, you know, when the governments that are returning this morning and in response to the accusations that Nigerian government in the past have reluted this money that have been returned, like we can't see, there's no evidence of no impact on the people. So now they are putting conditions, and the Nigerian parliament, I think, are rejecting and say, oh, this is infringement on the sovereignty. You can't tell us what to do. What is your opinion on that?
So it goes back to the model I was trying to bring on transparency and penalties. If the bodies, the World Bank, who are sending the money back, the US government, if they see that there is a transparent way that this money will come back into this account, like I said, maybe the government account, 1 billion, and we can trace how this money is being spent, then they would have no leg to stand on. If also within that, there's a process for penalties where if somebody like Dizani steals the money again, the person ends up in prison, right? And the money is taken back from them and put back into the system for the people, they would have no leg to stand on. But currently, the Nigerian government has no leg to stand on because the Nigerian government is full of corruption, cronyism, indiscipline. That's what my research shows, unfortunately. You know, they can beat around the bush. You know, they can declare that they are outraged as much as they want, but they are corrupt. And that's how the money left in the first place. So, unfortunately, the people who are going to suffer are the Nigerian people.
You mentioned the people, and this is us coming to the conclusion because of time. I wish we can have a part two of this. Because of time, you mentioned very, very critical. I can see a lot of intersection in your work and mine. And I might see how we can do some work in the future. When one of the things I've said in the conclusion of the book is like the youth, the women, all of these people are going to be important to the continent on Nigeria, you know, the kind of transformation we need. You mentioned the people. And I'll let me say some of the key things you said. You said power and resources should be in the hands of the people.
Yes.
And we're talking, like I mentioned in the last, when I interviewed Sowore, one of my criticism I said to him, I said, listen, you have no business running for presidency, because when you started the Sahara Reporters, ordinary Nigerians didn't have access to budgets. But, you know, now people have access to, oh, this is among the budgets. You know, that is democracy, where people can have access, and that we've moved to all of that. But now the question is, my question is, how do we, as a people, I've mentioned one, but how do we get the kind of system? Because obviously, from what you've been saying, is a systemic problem.
Yes.
It's a system problem. It's not even about all of this. It's like, if we have the right system, even on the model you've come, if the system is not in the right place, it won't work. It's a systemic problem. So how do you see this moving forward?
So you're right. An institution, we need to have the right institutions. And just what you said regarding the budget itself, now you can see it. Well, now you can see sections of it after it's been done. You still cannot suggest to the government what you want to be done in your neighborhood. You still don't know if things that are written down that should be done, if you know they're not done, what happens to what happens after that? There's still no effective process for that. We still don't know if actually what we're seeing is the entire budget. You know, the government can tell us. So you know, there are different ways to do this, you know, without sounding too academic. You know, these are debates that have been raging for a long time, you know, since we can, you know, since written, you know, philosophically, a very long time. So for Nigeria itself, if we're looking at how it can get done, well, I might not be, okay, I'll tell you the ways it can get done. The first thing, unfortunately, is if the people themselves, you know, and you see this in the writings of Plato themselves, they are revolution, right? And maybe that's what Shoori wants, you know. So, you know, if the people rise up and, you know, they take control from the masters, we saw this, you know, and we shouldn't be too scared of this, although it can be bloodless. But if you look at what happened historically, you can look at the French Revolution, look at the British Revolution itself. And if you look at other places, you know, where people have started movements to do this, it's possible. So there is one. The other way is by, you know, Plato will say, oh, if by mistake we have a benevolent king, you know, so if a good man stumbles into power and then creates these institutions, right? So a good person by mistake just say, oh, we're going to stop all of this. We're going to do the right thing now. That's another way. The third way, it could be slower, right? And I think Nigerians themselves, this might be the way for us. We have to find the right people and vote them into power. That seems to be the quickest way to do it for now. Because these people who have stolen money, they also have money to run elections. Think about how expensive it is to buy the form to be president of Nigeria, how expensive it is to run a campaign. If you're a good person, you and me, you know, it's going to be very hard. So we need to find the right people, and the qualities of those right people, we can't be judging them based on how they look, you know, the way, you know, they have to be people of integrity. It can't be based on religion, based on ethnicity. No, we have to say, listen, we're going to vote you in for these qualities. When you go in there, you're going to do exactly what you said you're going to do. Some of us might not like Donald Trump. I personally feel I have my misgivings about Donald Trump. But you know what? His base loves him. His base knows that what he says he's going to do, he's going to do it.
He's going to do it.
You know? Now, I have my misgivings with him, but we need to find those kind of people. We need to have people that we say, listen, we need to form political parties. The political party has to have in his manifesto. When we're going to go there, we're going to make the budget transparent. Anybody that steals is going to go to prison. We're going to seize the assets. We're going to write it into the constitution. So anybody that comes after us who wants to overthrow it, they're going to have their own mandate. And then the people themselves, and this is something Nigerians are going to have to get better at, we're going to have to vote the right people in. We have to stop voting based on ethnic interest, based on religious interest, because those people, they'll give you some money now, right? They'll, you know, votes, you know, they'll give you bread infrastructure, rice infrastructure, and then that's it, you know. So you've actually sold your birthright, but we ourselves have to say no, right? I'm not going to be like, okay, when I go there, I'll take my own. No, I'm going to look for the right people. I am going to, and we have to stop being lazy. One thing we do is we expect, you know, God forgive me, maybe I'll say, I know we're out of time. You know, Nigerians, I love Nigerians. We're very religious, right? We're very religious. And religion is very tied to African culture, you know, and we also believe in nature. So when we talk about climate change, you know, and all the Nigerians and Africans, we're very, you know, we respect nature. But we have this idea that we will just go to church and pray and have praise and worship, and we'll come out and Nigeria will be a better place. And, you know, the road will be fixed. You know, there'll be electricity. Yeah. Or you go to the mosque. It's not going to happen. It will not happen. Even the Bible says, little by little, you will take the land, right? I'm a Christian myself. Yeah. So we will have to know that it's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. And there are bad people out there who don't want transparency, who want to have access to the budget, who want to pass these resources on to their families, to their sons, to their daughters. We have to know that, listen, no, we have to find a way to find the right people, put them in power, and we have to make sure, we have to hold their hands and their legs to the fire, that they do exactly what we want them to do. And if they are not doing it, we vote them out. This idea that everybody is entitled to two terms is ridiculous. You know, this idea that, and finally, I'll say this because of time. Personally, I feel the best and easiest way to do this is to go back to the parliamentary system, you know, where we had the local government. So the person you have to vote for is your local government chief. So, do you know who your senator is, Michael? Do you know?
No.
Exactly. That's the problem. So you have senators who are earning much more than senators earn in the US. You have governors. Then you have local government chiefs. Then you have ministers. Then you have special advisors. Then you have the vice president. It's too expensive. All that money is too wasteful. And that's why they don't want us to see the budget, because we will be very angry if we know what's in there. We just need local government chiefs. And that's what the British gave us, by the way, when they left. We need to have, and that's what the British have. So they have just the MP. And in Nigeria, we have, what, 776 local governments. That's enough. And we can have regional, at least in the UK right now. We have the English Parliament. We have the Welsh Parliament. We have the Scottish Parliament. We have the Northern Irish Parliament. And that really helps. It helps to focus on the issues in the different regions. And then you can vote. You can see the budget. You can vote. I'm voting in this person because this person is going to. And then also that cost comes down. The cost of government comes down because the MPs, the local government chairmen, are also the ministers. You don't need a double portfolio for that. And we can't be like America. America is the largest economy in the world. They have a lot of money. Britain has cut their quota according to their side. They realize they're no longer a colonial power. And they have a system that works for them. Nigeria, we just want to, we're doing the most expensive that has the worst outcome. That has
Yeah. Unfortunately, Tolu, we're running out of time. But I do. You and I share a lot of there's a lot of alignment in some of the views. I think you should read my book. You see, a lot of what you're saying is in my book. And like Irali said, they say a foundation, when the foundation is faulty, there's nothing that can happen. Yeah. So it's a system. I think Nigeria is a case of other African states. We've not found a system. We've tinkered with parliamentary system, or government, one party system, military system. Africans need to go back to the table and find a system, like Riley said, that works for them. And pre-colonial Africa was democratic in a way.
Yeah.
So we need to find that system. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. But, you know, to do this, I think we'll have to bring you back to do part two. This is not, there's still a lot to cover in this. So I look towards having you again for us to do a part two of this conversation. But for now, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate your time and your very, very rich insights.
Thank you very much. Thank you
very much.
Thank you, everyone. Bye for now.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. As usual, join me to thank our guest, Dr. Tolarai Iwaju, for the rich insight he has provided on the topic, recovered loot or assets and Nigerian anti-corruption effort. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.